It is my privilege to invite a man who needs absolutely no introduction to come and to break forth the bread of life for you today. What's that? Tom.
You're a man of your word. You said no introduction.
No, I said I don't need to give an introduction. I might, though. You never know.
Should I go sit down?
No, stay right here. I just want you to know how much I appreciate Tom. And what a blessing he is in my life. And I just commend you to open your hearts and to hear what God's laid on his as the servant of God comes to break forth the word.
Thanks, Bob. So now I have this thing switched on just so we'll clear up all of these things right away. There. Thanks. So it's been 2 years almost since I had the opportunity to address you in this way. And some of you weren't here 2 years ago, and you're saying, thank God I didn't have to see that guy every Sunday. And you got Bob and Corrine here, and we were very blessed with you folks and your family here. And it's kind of a very unusual situation in this church that myself, our family, as a former pastor, been able to continue fellowshipping here. It's very unusual. And it says an awful lot about you as a congregation, about the leadership we've had here in the interim with Pastor Alan Poles last year and with Bob and Corrine coming this year. And we're very grateful for that privilege of continuing to be part of the service and hiding in a back pew or wherever I can sit comfortably. Those are great pews, aren't they? Yeah, you should have this job. You don't have to sit nearly that long. And, yeah. I almost always, and maybe always without exception, had a suit coat on or a sport coat on when I preached here, Bob. But there's a reason why I don't have today. I was going to wear one, and I asked Audrey to set out my wardrobe for the day, you know, because I don't wear suit coats very often in my present job. Been working in construction for nearly 2 years. And so just shortly before we were ready to head out the door, I put the sport coat on. Now, let me set the story here. Up to a couple years ago, the sports coats or the suit coats that I had started to shrink. I would never button them. Wouldn't. Or couldn't, but I wouldn't. And so about 2 years ago, I found this kind of a nice brown sports coat somewhere, probably Value Village, but it was like new, and I don't know where I found it, actually. But it still had tags on it this morning that we had to cut off. And so just before going out the door, I put this thing on. And I stood before Audrey, and I said, well, what do you think? That won't do. So everything else in my closet, according to one of my sons, is blue. And so nothing else went with this, so here I am. And you know what? It's been good for me to be working in construction, do some physical labor the last few years. Good for me health-wise. It's been, in some ways, it's been very healthy for me to sit where you're sitting and see church from that perspective again, having been a pastor for too long, probably. And but working in construction, as I said to many of you as we've talked over the last couple of years, has let me rub shoulders with the guys from whom I was with whom I was insulated from as a pastor. Like, I'm so grateful to have a pastor here. And I'm so much more aware of why we need a pastor. Because for myself, putting in my 45 or 50 hours a week in physical labor and thinking about this Sunday morning and having to say something to you significant and interesting. You got to pay somebody to have some time to think if you want to get that on a regular basis. And time to meet with you and time to pray with you and pray for you and time to think about the things that so many of us are just looking at day to day, trying to get through the day. And so it's been very good for me to have this couple years break from leading a church. When we resigned here 2 summers ago, My expectation was that we would have moved to another church, another community by last summer. But we didn't. So we're here still. And there have been, my resume has gone to many places. We'd from Thunder Bay to Vancouver Island as far as districts at the Alliance. And there's been some inquiries here and there. And none of them have progressed very far. We were convinced we were moving now or then. And our children and us have been living with the uncertainty of, well, when are we moving? When are we moving? And we don't know. Some of you are in that same boat. And the truth is, we are all in that boat, but we don't all know it. We live like we know what our future is. We live and plan as though we know the next day is going to bring. But we don't. Audrey shared a bit of her story a couple months ago when we had the family service over at the Medley Theater, Bass Theater, Four Wing Theater. Yeah, got it. Four Wing Theater. And you heard a bit about her traveling through the breast cancer and surgery and treatments and the outcomes, and we're very thankful for the positive outcomes. If you have been in this church any length of time, you will have heard some of my story and some of the things that we struggled with along the way. And we're getting more and more qualified to talk to you about disappointments. But the truth is, you don't learn anything from experience alone. You can go through all kinds of struggles, and you may not learn a single thing from them. Unless you take the time to reflect on them and ask the question, what does this mean? Or what am I to learn through this? Or how can I trust God better in spite of this? And we're on that journey, and we're trusting that God continues to use us here or there or wherever that he has in mind for us. I'm really afraid at the end of this message that I'm going to have you ask the question, so what? But I won't have an answer for you. You might want to ask the question, what's the point? And you know, the most fearful thing for a pastor when he's preaching is he gets through his third point and he realizes there is no point. So we've become good at messages without points, pointless messages. But presently, just to give you a little update, presently we're in communication with a couple churches, and there's some other possibilities in Alberta. And we're going to give it my best shot to return to being a pastor somewhere by the summer or in the summer. I kind of feel like 2 years is a long time to hang a resume out there. And if there's not a position that opens up this summer, then I'm going to take that as a direction that we'll just plan for our part to stay put for the next while and make the plans that are within our means to continue to, for me to support a family and continue to serve God. Just because I'm not paid as a pastor doesn't mean I'm not responsible for working for God's kingdom wherever I am. And these guys I rub shoulders with every day, it's a lot of fun to the relationships and the friendships and the conversations that we have. And that's where I am these days. So, a little bit of update, all because I'm not wearing a suit coat this morning. I mostly enjoy my present work. And I mostly enjoyed my work as a pastor. And if you can mostly enjoy your work, you're doing very well. Bob Wee was telling me, he was one of my supervisors in the Alliance, that work on the 70-30 principle. If you're energized by 70% of what's on your plate, of what you do, then you can do the other 30% that goes with the territory. And so, you know, you don't have to like everything about your job in order to like your job. You don't have to like everything about your position in life in order to continue to enjoy life. And so I mostly enjoy my present work. One of my favorite questions about how I'm doing is, so what's it feel like to work for a living? Seriously, I've had that question a number of times. Yeah, and I usually respond in these ways, and I've responded personally to some of you who didn't ask the question, but I gave you the answer anyways. That my present job and my former job are really very much alike. In my present job, I get to drive around. I get a new truck. I didn't get a new truck in my old job, but I got a new truck in this job. And get to drive around and deliver stuff and pick up stuff and meet people and suppliers and subtrades, and I'm kind of the go-between everybody in the company. And I have this phone called Mike, and anybody in the company with a Mike phone can call me and ask me for anything they want. And the subtrades can ask them to call me and ask me for anything they want. And so my present job description is servant of all. And you know what? That suits me personally. I like to serve. And that's just like my old job. Anybody with a phone, Bob? Or access to email can ask you for anything at all. And a pastor, when he's called minister, the word means servant, and servant of all. Of course, that's the job description for every child of God. You knew that. Servant of all. So that way, my job's just the same. There's one little difference, however. In my present job, everybody knows if I did or did not meet an expectation, because I'm dealing with concrete realities. But in my former job, I never knew what expectations I was or wasn't meeting. And that's the way it is with any job that's in a people-helping kind of role. Any job that has to do with organizing people in some way, the expectations that are communicated may not be the ones that are really wanted. And for myself, being a person who thinks or thought that I could please everybody, and that got me in trouble, personally, health-wise, that's a killer, to think there's expectations out there I can't meet. But that's the nature of work with people. So the present job is quite freeing in that regard. If you can do it adequately, in this economy, you don't even have to do it adequately to keep your job, but if you're doing adequately, you're well reimbursed, I guess I could say. So Pastor Bob's been leading us through a time of thinking about ourselves as the church, as the family of God, and our mission in this world, why we're here. I want to focus on a couple simple observations from a text that continues to explore the idea of our relationships. And it's Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 to 20. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. The relationship is the relationship with Jesus Christ that's in view in this text. There's a contrast ongoing throughout these verses between the few and the many. There are few who find the narrow way and walk the narrow path to heaven. And there are many walking the broad way to destruction. It's what Jesus said. These are Jesus' words. The few and the many. He says there will be many who say, Lord, Lord, on that day, but that Jesus says, I never knew you. But there are some, or the few, who will enter the kingdom of heaven. It's the contrast in these verses between the few and the many. Are we few, or are we many? If this was all we had to go on, we wouldn't be surprised that anywhere there was some visible sign of the church in the world, it would be struggling, weak, and poor, and few. But an interesting thing happens by the time you flip through these pages and you get to the last book of the New Testament, Revelation, and you read the description of the picture surrounding the throne of God, and there is a multitude there that's uncountable. Are they the few? Or are they the many? What happened? When the way is so narrow and so few find the way, how did it turn out that so many ended up around the throne of God? I don't think I'll answer that question. I want you to think about whether you are among the few or the many, the few that find their way or the many that make their own way. The outcomes of a life reveal the heart of the person. You want to know whether we are on the narrow way or on the broad way. We can check the outcomes of our life. That's what Jesus is doing. He's using the illustrations of false prophets as wolves in sheep's clothing. He says, by their fruit you will recognize them. And he uses the illustrations of fruit trees, that what is evident from the life comes from the heart within. There is congruity there. By your fruit you will recognize them. And so it is true, as Jesus says earlier in this chapter, that we are not to judge, lest we be judged. Yet, right here he says, make a judgment about the quality of fruit that you see. And he's not saying two different things. He's talking about two different things. And he's saying, don't judge lest you be judged. He's saying, don't be a condemning person. Don't just condemn out of hand. The church has been too well known through the years for that. And I think, Bob, you're going to address some of that when the church has been disappointing for us. We know that the church ought to do better than it's done. And that's why it has disappointed so many, even some of you sitting here. But you'll talk about that kind of thing. But we're to not be condemning, but that doesn't mean we close our eyes. We should be assessing the fruitfulness of a life and its outcome. If you're deciding whether to follow a particular path or a particular ministry or a particular person, then you should be able to look at some things and say, wow, you know, this is a good person to follow. Or you should be able to say, maybe to your friend whose eyes can't see what you see, don't go this way. Because sometimes we're blinded because we so much want to go a certain way or do a certain thing or follow a certain person that we can't see. and we need some help from the outside. Jesus said, by the outcome of their life, you should be able to tell what's in their heart. Those are a couple contrasts and a couple teachings that come from the text here. But I want to focus on the question of the relationship with Christ. It's not what you know, but who you know. You ever heard that expressed in a positive sense? Usually that's expressed by somebody who didn't get the job because somebody who had a connection got the job. It's not what you know, but who you know. Okay, if you don't make that an absolute statement, okay, granted there's certain some amount of knowledge needed if you're going to be a teacher that Roger hires. Okay? You're going to have some kind of adequate skills. Okay? So if you got two of them the same and there's one position, then there are other deciding factors. And, humanly speaking, the network of connections, the person you have on your reference form that maybe the hiring supervisor knows, makes a difference, doesn't it? I mean, that is how life is, isn't it? Not what you know, but who you know. Somebody asked me a short while ago, how did you get the job you got now? You must have known somebody. I started the day after I concluded as pastor and took a couple of my days off for training days before that. And I said, no, well, I do know lots of people, I said, but I didn't get the job because of who I knew this time. I saw the ad in the paper and I recognized by the description that it was Dave Price's job, and Dave must have been retiring, I surmised, because I knew Dave Price. And I thought, you know, that's a lot like what I used to do when I worked in construction during college days. Same kind of work. I just have to do it better. I have to work smarter now. I can't do the same work the same way I did it before. But so I guess I did know something about it, but I just called Valley Master and applied. Actually, you know what? That's not true. I did use a go-between. Yeah, I knew the foreman for Valley Master, and I called him first about the job. So you see, I did use some avenues to, and he said he put in a good word for me. So whether he did or not, I got the job the next day. So not what you know, but who you know. You need some minimal skills, some minimal knowledge to accomplish whatever job you're going to go for. Although the job is in the softer sciences like pastors and doctors and such, you can fake a lot more in that than you can in the trades. Yeah. Very hard to fake it as a plumber. But so it is that way a lot of the times. Is it fair? No, it isn't always fair. It really isn't fair when the person has a lot more skills and is overlooked because of a family or relative connection. It's often not fair, but then get used to it. Life's not fair, okay? But in spiritual matters, is it also true? It's not what you know, but who you know? On what basis did Jesus exclude some, or many, from his kingdom? On what basis? They came to him and they called him Lord. And they said to him, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? Okay? That might be what I'm doing now. So I'd stand before Jesus and say, Jesus, I preached in your name. They said, didn't we cast out demons in your name? Didn't we, what was the third thing they said we didn't do? They did do. Perform many miracles in your name. Didn't we do that? And how does Jesus respond? He says, then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. That is not fair. Look at everything good they did for him, and that's how he treats them? What's going on? Is he playing favorites? It's not what you know, but who you know. Is it? It's the heart that matters. I never knew you, he said. It's the relationship that matters, not the skill set, not even a spiritual power, but the relationship that matters. We can do an awful lot of things with human effort, but we cannot build the kingdom of God with human effort, merely human effort. Let me read these verses again. Not everyone who says to me, not everyone. There's some hope here. He didn't say, everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, is excluded. He says, not everyone who says will be accepted. So it's again the many and the few. So there's hope here. Okay, so, but not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Well, there is something to do then. You've got to do something to get your passage to heaven, don't you? And then these people that did stuff are excluded. What's going on here? That's why I told you, I don't think I'll have you ask the question, so what, at the end of this message. I'm asking it myself all the way through here. What is going on here? This relationship with Jesus Christ is connected vitally to doing the will of the Father in heaven, and yet simply doing good things does not mean you're connected rightly to Jesus Christ. Got it backwards. That makes sense? I should ask you to tell me what I just said then. If we're rightly related to Jesus Christ, we will be doing the will of our Father in heaven. 90% of that is written out for us. It's here in plain. 10% might be decisions about where to live or what job should I take. We think those are the big ones. 90%, it's here. This is the big one. What kind of person should I be? And how can I access God's power to be that kind of person? To do the will of my Father in heaven. If you're rightly related to Jesus, you will be found doing the will of your Father in heaven. But if you're busy doing good things, hoping that because of those good things, you'll be accepted by your Father in heaven, and you bypass Jesus, you will lose everything. Everything. It's not merely what you know, but who you know. And it's not who you know so much as who knows you. Jesus said, I never knew you. But what is he saying about you today? I know you. Can you hear that voice? Do you have that sense that you're accepted by God in heaven? And that Jesus can say about you, I know you. You are mine. We're in this together. Can you hear him? It's not just what we know, but who knows us. And it's not just what we do, and it's not just what we say, as in saying, Lord, Lord, but it's who we serve. It's possible to do all kinds of religious things without serving God. Very possible. I know full well that I can do a lot of religious things without serving God. In my own case, having preached most Sundays for 18 years here, you think a guy might get used to that. Well, some things about it you do. But one thing has stayed continually with me when I have an opportunity to address a congregation from God's Word. And that's the realization that I may look like an absolute utter fool any given day. My preparation is not adequate. My spiritual life is not matching the life of you in the pew. It's not by my qualifications that I could address you. But when I come to speak, I almost always pray to prayer something like this: Lord, what I've got, I offer. If I look like a fool in front of people, then I pray that you'll use that foolishness to accomplish something good anyways. Because I don't have anything to offer unless God works. There's not much that matters in this world. God and His people. It's not just what we know, but who knows us? Maybe you've been the kind of person that's pretty good. A lot of people who come and sit in a church pew try to be good. But the hardest person to reach with the good news about Jesus is a good person. Especially a religiously good person. Because they think they're already good enough. And that, of course, God has accepted them. They're running with the right crowd. But it's not what we do, but who we know and who knows us. I'll stop because I'm about to ramble. And you can ask yourself the question, so what?